Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show, we're proud to say, is brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. You name the insurance package, they have it there for you. They try to find the right price, the right coverage for you. And then when it comes time where you need your insurance, Purdy Insurance goes the extra mile for you. That's exactly the kind of group I want to be with. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, keywords 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We get now to our play-by-play call of the day on KMOX. Patrick Berglund scores for the Blues.
Goes to Berglund. He's got a breakaway. Berglund in, shoot, save, score! Nope, waved off. We'll say it was kicked in.
Folks in Toronto going through on whether or not the Berglund goal should count.
After reviewing the play, the call on the ice is reversed. We have a good lucky goal.
As opposed to what kind of hockey goal?
A bad hockey goal. That is a bad hockey goal.
It's a bad, bad hockey goal.
That's what I liked there the best go. About that cut was we have a good hockey goal.
Yeah. You can kick the puck in, or you assume you can kick like the ball in, obviously, in soccer. You're supposed to. It's a good soccer goal. Or as they would say, football. We're going to get to your Peyton Manning question in a moment. But first of all, I know a lot of fans want to hear about... We're not going to get into the Phillies only too much yet. And remember, we are proud to be your new home for the Philadelphia Phillies.
Actually,
you want to build a... go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, actually, the schedule for the spring is now on WKOK.com. Click sports schedule. Click sports schedule.
And then hit it on the side. Is it on our app?
Yes. It is app friendly, yes. App friendly, yes.
Not surprised. But we are, look, you want to build a really good station where sports is a part of what you're doing. Baseball is a big component to it. And having the area's preeminent baseball team on, the one that has such a depth of following. Hey, look, I know we have a lot of Yankee and Met fans here. I mean, Dick from Milton's a huge Orioles fan. But, like, you know, most people, and there are more and more Pirate fans because Root Sports obviously is on in the area too, and the Pirates have had some success. The Phillies are building something here. They're building something, and we're proud that we're back as the station that's carrying the Philadelphia Phillies this year, starting with spring training. Speaking of Philadelphia, let's bring in Matt Leon, KYW Philadelphia. Matt, welcome back. It's great to have you. All right. Villanova is number one. Okay. Does anybody know who number one actually is in this college basketball season?
No, and I think that's what makes it great. I think the fact that on any given day you can see just about anything. It's why we all love the tournament. Now the concept of the tournament kind of spilling into the regular season. But I will say this: Jay Wright's squad is good.
Yeah, they are
really good. They are deep. You hear people say a team's eight deep, and you think, all right, well, that's. But this is eight deep. Eight kids that could start for just about any team in the country. They showed that depth with the three or four games the last week or two when they didn't have their big man Daniel Ochefu because of a concussion. Did not miss a beat, went into Providence and won a huge road game there. He comes back and steps right in. They're a really good team. They are fun to watch. They spread the ball. A lot of different guys contribute. It's a really good squad.
What kind of difference does Hart make, though, in this team? It looks like he's the one that's really stepped up because Archie Dack, to me, is, Ryan is always a given. What about Hart's contributions?
Yeah, no, he's been big too, not just offensively, but defensively on the glass. He may be the guy that if you talk to people and polled, he may be the MVP of a team, but he's one of many on this group. And I was really impressed with how they played without Ochefo. I mean, not that I thought they would fall apart, but he's a big part of what they do. And to have him go down for those three games and to stay a lot, to stay where they were and to play at the level they were, I found that really, really impressive.
Matt, this is not the Big East of Syracuse, Pitt, UConn, and so forth. This is now the restructured Big East. Are they challenged enough in this conference? There are some really good teams, but are they challenged enough in this conference?
That's a legitimate question and concern. Like you said, it's not close to what it was. And, you know, in the last few years, you had Creighton really good. Creighton's okay this year, but they're not great. Providence is a really good team. But top to bottom, the thing you used to get with the Big East was just a battle every game. And you might not have that. And, you know, if you want to, one of the reasons perhaps that Villanova has struggled in the tournament the last few years is because maybe you don't get that night in, night out in the conference like you used to. And that's really kind of been the big question the last few years, is that the Wildcats have been bounced in the second round is as far as they have advanced since they went to the Final Four a few years ago. So, you know, there could be something to that. But overall, I don't think anyone would argue that this conference is not quite the same. It's still good, but it's not quite the same as it was.
Right. But it's still interesting because I think they've played really well, and Temple has played, for the most part, really well. And St. Joe's, can anybody put a price on St. Joe's not losing a road game this year?
I'll tell you what, is that amazing? Or St. Joe's has really been a great story.
Yeah.
Everybody knew about DeAndre Bembry. If you haven't had a chance to watch this kid play, do it. He is a special talent. He's going to be playing in the NBA sooner rather than later. But one of the problems was last year they had DeAndre Bembry and not much else.
Right.
This year they've got a kid named Isaiah Miles who has just taken his game to another level, actually is right there in scoring and rebounding with Bembry. They've become a team that can go much deeper. They spread it out, getting great point guard play. So I think St. Joe's, they've got a huge game on Wednesday. Well, Philadelphia is going to be the center of the college basketball world on Wednesday night.
Right.
Temple hosts Villanova, and St. Joe's hosts Dayton. And that's a huge game for the Hawks' resume for the NCAA tournament, Dayton in the top 20. So it's going to be fun to be in the city on Wednesday night.
Yeah, no doubt, because Dick Girardi has talked to me about this several times, how big Wednesday is. I think St. Joe's would be helped if the game were at Dayton. But that's
that's the truth. I mean, that, like you said, that is something. There is no way you could. Well, you can't expect that out of any team at the high Division I level. But the St. Joe's team, and I think it's just one of those things that just kind of starts out. They pick up a nice win here, a nice win there, and then it starts to develop a thing where the team takes pride in it, wears it as a badge of honor, and next thing you know, they're undefeated on the road as we pass Valentine's Day.
Right, because I know how good GW is because I saw them in person. I know what they bring to the table, and they dusted them.
They dismissed them. I was stunned at how easy that was for them. That was because that really, up until this Dayton game, that was a game a lot of people were circling and go, okay, now this is where, you know, we'll find out a little bit about St. Joe's and are they as good as that record indicates. And boy, was that something else.
Any movement in the Philadelphia Eagles situation with anything, or is everything just in a holding pattern circling a fogged-in airport?
Yeah, no, nothing new as far as still waiting to see. I think tomorrow is the day you can start to put the franchise tag on players.
Yep.
And so we'll wait and see. There are reports that the Eagles won't franchise Sam Bradford. So that would seem to be the direction the arrow's pointing in. But past that, still no new deal for Fletcher Cox, who's really the only remaining current player that people are expecting to get an extension or a new deal. Now, Cox still was under contract for the 2016 season, so it's not dire if nothing happens. But given the way the wind's been blowing and how good Cox was, you would think they're going to want to wrap him up, get him signed, sealed, and delivered and taken care of so that there's no whispers of anything going into the season. Because we all know a contract dynamic can change if it gets to the last year of a contract and the player wants to be taken care of and hasn't and such. So I'd be stunned if eventually something doesn't get done this offseason. But that's going to be a lot of money because Fletcher Cox, and now that they're moving back to a 4-3, my goodness, is he going to be something else.
Yeah, he is going to be something else. Look, the two key guys they've got to have contracts from, Fletcher Cox and Sam Bradford. And after that, then you can start filling in around them.
Yeah, I agree. There's a strong sentiment of people who don't think Bradford's worth the money, and you can argue that, but then I think I said this to you last week. My question is, all right, what's the next 8 words of that sentence? You don't bring Bradford back. What are you doing? And I think it's one of those things that people will say, oh, well, just let Sanchez play quarterback for a year until you get your guy. And I think that's easy to say in February and March. I would love to talk to those same people on Thanksgiving after Mark Sanchez has had a third straight 5-turnover game. So,
Right. Yeah,
I don't know what the other answer is at this point.
When the Giants re-signed Eli Manning to a long-term deal, some people said, well, okay. And the first thing you say is, darn right, exactly what are your options after that? I mean, exactly who out there is going to be able to do what he does with his experience level? Did you feel like Bradford when you saw – I want to take the last game against the Giants – because that would be more of a conventional offense compared to what Chip played. When you watched him in a more conventional style overall, did it look like it suited him?
It's tough to say because while they did do some more conventional things, they ran a couple plays out of the standard power formation with DeMarco Murray and stuff like that. For the most part, they pretty much ran the same thing.
Yeah,
it's hard to, you know, because I think Chip got fired on a Tuesday, so there wasn't a lot of room. I've been saying, I thought Sam Bradford was very good the last 6-7 weeks of the season. Once you could tell, and I'll tell you when you could almost see it watching the game, was the game they lost against Carolina, which was almost the midpoint of the season.
Right.
You just started to notice all of a sudden little things. Stepping up in the pocket, the way he was creating time, he just looked more comfortable. It was like something had clicked, like he had finally kind of taken a deep breath and said, okay, you know what, the knee's fine. I can go play football. I'm comfortable. I'm getting comfortable with the system. And really, since that point, he was very good. Did he have eye-popping numbers? No. Did they have a lot of success, wins and losses? No. You can go back and forth. You can find as many people that say it's his fault they didn't do well as it wasn't his fault. And, you know, he's supposed to make everyone else better. The other side will say, well, they didn't have enough talent for anyone to make them better. I think that he was improved as the season went on. And right now, and it's easy to say because it's not my money, if it was up to me, and not having the expert knowledge of the salary cap, I would just franchise him. I punt on the decision for a year and then take it from there.
That's an interesting point. Final question. 2 weeks away for the NHL trade deadline. What do the Flyers do? They try and improve themselves by making a deal and acquiring someone, or do they become one of those that people turn to get talent from?
I honestly don't think they're going to be very busy at all, and if they do anything, I would think that they'd be a little more seller than buyer at this point. I think Ron Hextall's been pretty steadfast that he believes, and I think rightfully so, that you really have sustained success by building through your farm system through the draft and all. And, you know, we've already seen the Gostis Bear kid, and you're on the verge of having some other premium blue chip kids come through in the next year or so. So I think they're 6 points out of the playoffs now. They've kind of been stuck in this 4 to 6 points out of the playoffs for about a month. I don't really know how much hope you have that they're going to be able to push through, because it's not just that they're on the outside looking in. I think there's four teams ahead of them to get to the playoffs. So that's always a dicey proposition when you're dealing with more than one or two teams that you have to overcome. So I would be surprised, but I don't think it's going to be anything earth-shattering either way. You might be talking a third line or forward or an extra defenseman. Maybe they would move or something like that, but I don't think they're going to do much. I think this was a year that everybody kind of looked at, especially with Dave Hextall taking over as coach, that maybe not quite a rebuilding year, but a retooling year, as they kind of got used to things and Hextall got used to being a head coach at the NHL level. I think, if anything, they've overachieved, but I don't think anyone expects anything big out of them, expected anything big out of them as far as playoffs or anything like that, and there's really no reason to deviate from that, in my opinion.
Always a pleasure, Matt. Thanks for the time and the information.
All right, take care, sir.
Matt Lee on KYW Philadelphia. One quick note for you. Penn State will play basketball against Iowa Wednesday night at the Jordan Center. Right now, Iowa fighting to be on the one line. They're at Rutgers on Saturday at one. Rutgers top player Corey Sanders, who has had a really outstanding freshman year, nearly 17 points a game, was suspended today for 2 weeks by head coach Eddie Jordan. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance. There's nothing like Kevin dancing to this one in the studio.
Just
poor Jennifer Wakeman. Poor Jennifer Wakeman having to view that.
Just head bobbing, no dancing.
I have a lot of respect for Jen. I just want to tell you that she has to put up with seeing you dance to that. Wow.
They're not throwing money in my direction, I can tell you that.
They're throwing something. It's not cash.
It's not cash.
It's not cash. All right.
Hey, congratulations on 1,000 broadcasts of Penn State events. That's outstanding. That's a big number, my friend.
Actually, just basketball.
Was it just basketball? Wasn't football included? That's awesome. That's awesome.
When I did a Temple game at the Link, I don't know what year it was, 11, maybe? That's when I did my 1,000th Penn State Sports Network, whatever, blah, blah. This was just for 1,000 Penn State basketball games on the network. I don't count exhibition games. They play Marathon Oil. They play Athletes in Action. They play the Soviet team, whatever. No, I don't count it. It was just games I've done on the Penn State Sports Network. They were either regular season or postseason games. So. Yes, that was the Nebraska game was number 1,000.
Did they give you a basketball? Because when you score 1,000 points, you get a basketball.
No.
Well, I got to talk to some people. We need to get you a basketball.
Oh, I don't need a basketball.
Well, there's a golden mic I have that has a couple of calls on it. Maybe I could get you one of those.
they gave me a box of those. I got to send one to him. I'm at the appropriate time, I'm sending one to Jack Ham. Here's the reason why. Because obviously Dick and Jeff already have them. But every time Jack gets a bobblehead, I get a package in the mail of the Jack bobblehead. Okay. One of him with the Steelers, and then one of them where he's the owner of the Johnstown Tomahawks.
Is that the Johnstown one? Yeah.
Yeah, that was the last one he sent me. And he signs the box. okay. Thank you. So he will get one at the appropriate time before the Blue White game, and I will sign the box.
Nice.
As payback. He called me today. He goes, he called me up today. He says, 1,000 games. He's like, he says, how many postseason games you done? I said, you don't want to know. I'm talking about NCAA games. He wanted to know. I said, you don't want to know. Then we went through the, I said, I might be the definition of insanity where you just keep going and doing the same thing over and over again.
I just want you to know that Jack's bobblehead last sold for about $95.
Not what?
This I'm not kidding. The Jack Ham bobblehead Johnstown Tomahawks hockey stick and football ultra last sold for about $95.
You're kidding me.
Now, I put yours up on eBay, and I got so far I've gotten a nickel. So I'm looking forward. I think I've got a shot to get to 95.
That's
5 cents more than I thought I was going to get.
No, all kidding aside, the last time it was listed was earlier this year. It appears as though the price on eBay was about $95.50. It might have been just a little bit lower.
The only time I ever took it out of the box is after he sent me the bobblehead. It turned out it was, he sent it to me in the wintertime. So at the blue-white game that year, I took it out of the box and I plopped it down in between us. And he walks in, he just starts laughing. I said, I need an inspiration to do this game today. The problem I had was I couldn't keep the hockey stick in his hand.
He looks good as a hockey player. He's got a hockey stick in one hand and a football in the other.
That's worth $95?
Listen, everything has a value to the right buyer.
It's sitting there in the shelf right now to my left. It's gathering dust.
Might not be on there much longer.
Nah, I can't do that to him.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
If you're not insured with the Purdy Insurance Agency, you may not be getting the most out of your insurance coverage. Locally owned and family operated for over 90 years, the experienced team at Purdy will compare your rates and coverage among a number of nationally recognized insurers to make sure you're getting the most out of your insurance dollars. And once you join the Purdy family of customers, you'll experience service and claims handling that's second to none. Call 1-800-677-2478 to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Look, I want an insurance agent that understands my needs, understands what I can do for the right price, and then if I need to get a hold of my insurance agent, such as a claim, that they will jump on it as if it happened to them. I just described the great people at Purdy Insurance. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. There's a reason why they've served the Valley for decades. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Bozo of the day. The NBA All-Star Game and the lack of defense, 196. I mean, they almost scored two bills, man. Can you believe that? 196 to 173. Are you kidding me? Well, enough of that topic, but that's our bozo of the day. Howard Bryant of ESPN, a very intelligent, thoughtful columnist, has penned something, said, a look in the mirror, what Peyton Manning's allegations tell us about sports and ourselves. And he's talking about the Manning situation, Cam Newton, and so forth. And he talked about how in the article he discussed, I'll use his words now. For a week, Cam Newton's sour news conference has received the treatment of the major news event of the day. Bigger than Von Miller, bigger than the Broncos, even though Newton never once raised his voice and did not verbally attack the assembled press. At a time where Bill Belichick and Greg Popovich unprofessionally make daily sport out of belittling professional journalists, and it's laughed off as being curmudgeons and their geniuses. Number one, did we make a lot out of what Cam Newton said last week or didn't say?
No, we talked about it briefly, but that's it.
What did we spend five, maybe 6 minutes on a total, yeah, saying, hey, look, you're the face of the franchise. I know it's hard, but you got to kind of suck it up and just do the best you can in a situation like that. That's all we said. Pure and simple. We did not go on and on ad nauseum about it. Praised him as a great player. Praised him as a showman. I have no problem with dabbing and dancing and Superman. None of that. It's a guy that gives football. How many times have we mentioned in the last 3 weeks how he gives the footballs to kids, how he does a lot in the community, and he's the face of the franchise. Pretty straightforward, objective look at a guy who's a great athlete and someone who plays the position a bit differently than almost everyone else because he has the physical gifts and the mind to play it different than anyone else. So I think our coverage of Cam Newton has been fair beyond fair. Now, has the national media spent too much time on it? How much time has Dan Patrick spent on it? I would guess not too much. Because, you know, Dan Patrick's usually pretty level-headed about everything, and I'm sure he made mention of it, but I don't think he belabored it. Fair?
Yeah, I don't think he hit it that hard. I mean, yeah, long period of time.
Right, you mention it, but we mostly talk about the Broncos playing with the lead, how great Von Miller played, everything he's overcome, that Manning was a game manager, things like that. Obviously, there are other stories. I mean, because it's not just a black versus white that he's drawing the comparison to. He said because he puts here, in a time of Ray Rice, Adrian Peterson, Greg Hardy, Johnny Manziel, and Baylor University, Newton being upset that he lost a football game has received far more treatment than Manning's involvement in being named in a lawsuit against the University of Tennessee. And then he also goes on and he mentions that Manning gets better treatment from the league than, for example, Tom Brady. All right. Here's the issue that I have with the Manning lawsuit. It absolutely must be discussed. It shouldn't be called the Manning lawsuit. It's not. The lawsuit is against the University of Tennessee, and the incident is mentioned in there. Number one, I don't know about you, but I mean, I've known about this since 2003. So this was nothing new to hear it come up again. I thought, oh, okay, this is coming up again. But it's part of an overall lawsuit about Manning. So it's not something I had not heard of. I heard about it 13 years ago when it first surfaced. So it wasn't one of those like, oh, my goodness, what happened here? But here's the next part. With the Super Bowl, everything is magnified. Josh Norman says something about Emmanuel Sanders. Emmanuel Sanders says something back to Josh Norman. It takes on a life of its own for 24 hours. Oh, my goodness, the assembled me. Yeah, more media there than anything else. So when the game's over, you know, the starting quarterback is always going to have to come out for each team and talk. And the starting quarterback for Carolina came out. It wasn't the best day on the face of the earth for them. And then not only that, but the press conference is covered live on ESPN, NFL Network, CBS Sportsnet. I don't know if Fox Sports 1 did or not, but I know CBS Sportsnet, ESPN, and the NFL Network covered it. So people got, I mean, I watched it live when it happened. I thought, well, that's not good. That's all I thought. I didn't think it was good or a disaster or anything like that. So everyone witnesses it. And then, of course, when you watch SportsCenter the next day, we all witness it again and again and again. The Manning situation is this. None of us know what the heck happened. Zero. It's all guesswork on our part. She accused him of something. He responded back. And I believe there was a settlement, I think, in 2003, I think.
I think the suit part of it came after the book came out. There was a book.
Well, there was a settlement, I think, where I think he settled this some way. I think they did. But this is going back. Again, I'm trying to do this off of memory from
But I think you're like right. I think they did settle it, yeah.
12, 13 years ago. But this suit is against the University of Tennessee, and he's mentioned in the suit, or the incident, I should say. Not, you know, the incident is mentioned in the suit. I think it's a fair way to do it. So now they're talking about how his image is built on squeaky, you know, his squeaky clean image is built on lies and things like that. And again, I don't know what is or isn't, because none of us were there. So it's one of those that you have to let it play out and see how it plays out first. I can't draw conclusions because I don't know. The Cam Newton thing is a minute blip of any kind on the radar. To make it any bigger deal than a blip is just, it's part of the unfortunate 24/7 cycle where you have to have items to talk about. And we didn't spend a lot of time on it because it's, again, I don't think it's any big deal. And yeah, Greg Popovich does treat sideline reporters as if they're throwaways onto the scrap heap of life. And Bill Belichick is already on to, I don't know who they're opening with next year. And the incident took place, I think, his freshman year in 96, I think.
96,
So, I mean, that's when it took place. I know you wrote something on the screen. I'm not even going to read that.
Well, it was just the timeline of the suit that you were talking about. So that was actually a while ago.
Yeah, I mean, no, I knew it took place. Like I said, I knew this took place a long time ago. I remember when it came out in 2003, I think it came out. And
it was settled with the university.
Yeah. It was one of those, like, okay, whatever. And again, you don't know if the settling is settling an admission of guilt. He claims he was mooning another teammate, but somebody else who was in the locker room says no. Let's see here.
Well, there was another suit then in 03 when.
That's the one I'm talking about.
Well, yeah, that was during the book. That was in the book where she claims the book cast her in a negative light and that Manning's characterizations were false and led to her losing her job at the Florida Southern College.
Right. So that's, and again, you don't know and we don't know and the media doesn't know what did or didn't happen. We know what she alleges. We know what he claims. And I have no conclusion either way. None. Because we weren't there. So I don't know. Is that protecting Peyton Manning? No, because I don't know. He may be in the wrong. Is it against her? No, she may be absolutely right. I don't know. I mean, do you know? I don't know. So that's what the difference is because it happened, A, 20 years ago. B, was settled in some form in 2003. This is a lawsuit against the University of Tennessee. It is part of her evidence package that in order to win this case, that's an incident that she cited along the way against the University of Tennessee. Okay. After that, we have to wait to see how it plays out. So this is where I disagree with Howard Bryant. When you take something that you don't really know anything about, you are obligated to report that the incident is a part of a lawsuit against the University of Tennessee. And he's going to be a prominent name that is a magnet to the story. Um, after that, we have to see how does it play out. Is it considered to be absolute? Is it significant? Because again, his version is the opposite of her version. And I don't know, and you don't know. I have no idea. Now, this goes back to something else I've talked about how many times. And I've said this to Kevin how many times. It's one of the reasons why over the years I root for teams, I don't root for players. You just don't know. I mean, you were devastated about Lance Armstrong.
Yeah, that one, I mean, time and time again, I defended him. And now it's hard to, like, defend anybody at this point because I got burned so bad.
Well, yeah, but okay, but here's the difference and here's the lesson learned. I mean, history's our greatest teacher, whether it's personal history or whether it's big world history. History is the greatest teacher, and I was talking to my class about this today, how they need to have a better understanding so that they understand going forward the importance of history. And I said, you want to be good sportscasters, understand the importance of history along the way to help you form and shape your thoughts. Your personal history of defending Lance Armstrong is something you're not going to do again for somebody else because
right.
you feel burned.
Right.
And here's the reason why. Have you ever met Lance Armstrong?
No.
Exactly. And you may have met him several times, but only in a chance meeting way. You don't know him. You don't know who he is. You don't know the people around him or anything like that. You just know that he's the great cyclist who won the Tour de France 7 times and was a medalist in the Olympics. And you didn't want to believe any of the allegations against him, especially when he steadfastly denied everything. And I think what the Lance Armstrong story tells us is that no matter what, in a situation like this, you throw caution to the wind and you need to let it play out. Because in reality, we don't know these people. We don't. Sports is different now than it was in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, where fans idolized Willie Mays. Fans idolized Mickey Mantle. They idolized John Unitas. They idolized Lenny Moore. They idolized Y.A. Tittle, Frank Gifford. And in reality, people didn't know much of anything about them. I mean, we know what we read. You know, mostly about Y.A. Tittle's career, his upbringing, things like that. You know, John Unitas, Western Pennsylvania, you know, ends up going to Louisville, you know, undrafted, went to camp with the Steelers and goes to the Colts and then has a great, awesome, incredible career. Now, John Unitas was also somebody who stayed in Baltimore, worked around people, the whole thing. So, I mean, the people of Baltimore, for example, I think pretty much knew him because he was a down-to-earth guy that was around the community all the time. So that's a little bit different. You don't have the entourage and the handlers of today and the insulation as compared to back then, but you don't have the stories either. You don't have the stories either. You don't know which athletes were dragged out of bars and stumbled into practice, hungover and things like that, you know, in those days, and who was womanizing and who wasn't and who was
Babe Ruth would have been a median darling as far as right. stories like that, and not just right. because of his hitting.
Right. I mean, would anybody have known about Johnny Manziel doing what he did in Vegas in the 1950s and 60s? Probably not. He probably would have gotten away with it. Right? I mean, people don't know. I mean, we see people on TV and we don't really know them. And that's why, I mean, I realize brands are built and so forth, but, you know, I've been around Peyton Manning, for example, one time in my life. Do I think he's a great quarterback when I watch him play quarterback over the course of his career? I think he's an absolutely great quarterback over the course of his career. But beyond that, do I know really much of anything about him except for the basics? Nope. And the person accusing him, I know as much about Peyton Manning as I do of the person that made the accusation. I don't know much about either one of them in reality. But to say he's part of a protected class of player, you know, in the NFL, it's not the NFL's job to go after anybody. If the media wants to talk about the fact that he's named in a suit, the suit's against Tennessee, his name comes up in the lawsuit, you absolutely need to at least report it because it's there. But after that, unless you have an investigative reporter looking into it, which I'm sure some people will, what else are you supposed to say about it? Am I supposed to condemn Peyton Manning when I don't know the facts? Am I supposed to make her look bad when I don't know the facts, where she may be absolutely right, he may be wrong, or he may be right and she may be wrong? I don't know. It's all guesswork. And we know, in reality, we know as much about him as we do about her. I don't know. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Mitch, Album of the Detroit Free Press wrote an article today about how ridiculous recruiting has become. And he starts out by saying, years ago I sat in Bo Schembechler's office as he finished a phone call to a recruit. His voice was unnaturally high and soft, and a smile seemed pasted on his face. When he hung up the phone, he banged the handset into the base and looked at me and said, "My goodness, I hate this recruiting stuff." It's a little different now, isn't it? So when's your next big hoops game?
Let's see here on WKOK. It'll be Shikellamy and Montoursville from the Phil Lockoff Gymnasium Friday night. 6:30 airtime, 7 o'clock tip.
Eastern time?
Yes. I still haven't figured out what it is in the Midwest yet.
Oh, it'll be 6 Central.
And we do have a few that listen in the Middle East, and I don't know what the time is there either.